LockedOnGiants.com.
Manning back, steps up, heaves one down the middle of the field into the end zone, and Nix makes the catch for the touchdown. He went up with the big hands and caught it on the Hail Mary.
Boots one, returnable for Williams from his own 20. Lost the ball, and the Giants say they have it, and they do. Devin Thomas recovered it, but the rookie Jaquan Williams punched it out.
Manning out of the shotgun set, he's back to throw. Finds the pocket, deep ball down the left sideline, and it's going to be caught. Was he inbounds? Yes, Manningham on the sideline. Brady's under pressure, Brady's chased, Brady heaves one down the middle of the field into the end zone, a jump ball, and it's incomplete, and the ball game's over, and the Giants have won Super Bowl 46.
Now here are your hosts, John Schmelk and Lance Meadow.
Welcome to Big Blue Kickoff Live right here on Giants.com. It's all presented by Andrew Mark, 201-939-4513, 201-939-4513. And wow, what a game. When you go into a Super Bowl, all you could ask for is to be intrigued and locked in throughout the entire contest. And it looked a little dicey there in the third quarter, but the 49ers made a late run. It came down to the wire. The 49ers inside the 10-yard line with four chances to try to win that football game. It was great theater. They couldn't get the job done. And there's a lot to talk about in terms of this game. Lance, good morning. How are you?
Doing very well, John. And I agree, it was a very exciting game. I would say it was dicey even in the second quarter when it looked like the Ravens were going to run away with this contest. A little blackout maybe changed the momentum of things. The Niners came out very strong in the third quarter. You had that bad punt after the Niners got on the board with a touchdown. They wound up scoring again, made things interesting. But really the difference in this contest was San Francisco dug itself in such a deep hole in that first half that regardless of that magical comeback, those little things, Kaepernick, some of his bad throws, the turnovers in the first half, it really came back to haunt them, and they just did not have enough gas in the tank.
More often than not, when you're playing in a Super Bowl with two of the best teams in football in the game, turnovers will be the deciding factor, and lo and behold, the 49ers with two turnovers, the Ravens with just one, and the 49ers lose by a score. So quite honestly, that in the end is probably what decided this game. But there are other things that played a huge part in this game as well. Red zone percentage, for one. The 49ers just 2 of 6 in the red zone. It's hard to win games when you're 2 of 6 in the red zone. Granted, they did put up 31 points, but the Ravens, the second-best red zone defensive team in the league this year. The Niners just 21st in the red zone offensively in terms of touchdown percentage. Niners scoring a touchdown just 50% of the time, and Ravens only allowing a touchdown 43% of the time during the regular season. So that held to form. But if you head into this game, and I tell you, the 49ers put up 31 points on the Baltimore Ravens, you would think that they would win this game. But time and time again, when that 49er defense needed to make a stop, they simply could not do it. They forced just 3 punts in this game. They turned the Ravens over on downs once, but that was more or less by the Ravens' choice. They could have kicked a field goal in that possession if they chose to. Instead, they tried that fake field goal, and they forced that one fumble. So in a game where the Ravens had, I'm not going to count that final possession, but the Ravens weren't trying to get a first down. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11. 11 possessions. The 49ers prevented them from scoring only 4 times. 4.
And it's really surprising given how solid the Niners defense had been throughout the whole season. But they gave up a lot of big plays. The secondary didn't play very well at all throughout this contest. Culliver had an extremely rough game. The Jacoby Jones touchdown is probably the best example. He catches a deep ball, falls on the floor. There's two Niners in the vicinity, gets up, uses a juke move, and still winds up in the end zone. That, to me, is inexcusable. You got to at least touch him, bring him down, and put some pressure back on the Ravens. Maybe you salvage the drive, and you hold them to a field goal. And who knows? The fact that you lose by 3 points, that could have been a difference maker.
And we'll get the more specific plays as this show goes along. But some other bigger picture things, Lance, it just seemed like, much like in the postseason thus far, the Ravens simply made the 50-50 play more often than the 49ers did. You saw Anquan Boldin time and time again, even when the coverage was pretty good, still make the play. On that 3rd-and-1, they threw that back shoulder pass to Boldin. Culliver, on one of the few plays in the game where he actually had good coverage, did cover him well on that play, Bolden still made the catch. You saw other 50-50 plays where Bolden or Torrey Smith were covered pretty well. They used their size to go up there and make the play. And on the other hand, Vernon Davis streaking down the sideline. Ball just gets him in the fingertips and hands. He can't pull it in. On the two-point conversion play, the Ravens blitz. Kaepernick and Randy Moss have to have a sight adjustment. Randy Moss runs the slant. Looked like Kaepernick tried to throw a back shoulder fade. Not on the same page. Time and time again, small plays here or there. The Niners did not make the play when they had to, and the Ravens did.
And Ed Dixon, too, made some key catches in the first half. There was some juggling going on, and he wound up hauling that in, so that helped them continue a drive, and they ultimately were able to score with Dennis Pitta. Yeah, the Niners had some plays that they pretty much left on the field, and that was Baker. I mean, Crabtree, I thought, played a great game, made some real solid catches in the middle of the field to help sustain drives. The running game, 182 on the ground. They outran the Ravens by over 100 yards. They outgained the Ravens by over 100 yards. You look at the numbers. If you didn't watch any of this game, by the numbers alone, regardless of the red zone inefficiency, as I like to call it, you would think San Francisco outplayed Baltimore. But then you take the turnovers into consideration and the special teams difference maker. This is the second straight season where special teams has haunted the Niners.
Perfect
example. Go back to the Giants game.
Made a play. The Ravens made that play, a big special teams return on a kickoff. And when you look at these games over the course of the season, and Coach Coughlin loves these statistics, you look at a team's percentage chance of winning a game when they win the turnover battle. You're looking at 60-70% of the time you win that football game. When you score a special teams touchdown and win the turnover battle, you're talking winning games 9 out of 10 times. The fact the 49ers still had a chance in this game, despite the fact they gave up a special teams touchdown and had more turnovers than the Baltimore Ravens, was telling and how good of a team they really are. And, you know, we'll talk about that final four plays for the 49ers and the last pass in a second. But I think you're right in a lot of ways, Lance. You look back at the first half of this game, and, you know, you could say you got to make the plays at the end of the game. That's fine. But the Niners shouldn't have been in that position. They played such a poor first half, whether it was the turnovers, Colin Kaepernick not being particularly sharp, the 49ers' inability to run the football in the first half as well. You take all those things into consideration, and defense not being able to get any stops either. The Niners simply lost this game in the first half. They had too high of a hill to climb in the second half, and they just couldn't get it done.
That's why the fact that they made this game interesting is amazing in itself.
Yeah.
Given that they had big play after big play that they surrendered, and as you mentioned, the special teams play, which to me was a big difference maker, especially when you're down 21-6, it's the start of the third quarter, here's an opportunity to right the ship, and boom, right out of the gates, Jacoby Jones has a lane extremely wide that he takes full advantage, and that helped cushion the lead. And, you know, luckily the blackout came, I guess, at the right time to help rescue the San Francisco 49ers. But looking at the momentum swing here, I'll go back early in the game. The Ravens had that early touchdown where Joe Flacco hooks up with Anquan Boldin, and the ensuing possession in which the Niners have the football, you know, they march down the field. They get all the way to the Baltimore 8, and Kaepernick throws into the end zone to Crabtree. It was a little too high, but it was still a catchable football. Randy Moss is directly behind him.
Wide open. And he's the best wide receiver of all time.
If Crabtree doesn't deflect that, which he made obvious during Super Bowl week, he probably gets that, Randy Moss, and that's probably a touchdown. We're looking at a 7-7 game. And yes, you know, a lot happened after that, but it's the small things that add up in the end, and if that's a tie game, who knows where momentum goes from that perspective and that point on. And I think that was a big lost opportunity for the Niners. They had to settle for a field goal, and Baltimore, you know, had to punt on the next possession, but then wound up two possessions later getting a touchdown to Dennis Pitta. So it's a 14-3 game now instead of 14-7. And it was one thing that piled up after another. And give Baltimore a lot of credit. You know, they were the hungry team in the first half. You get a comfortable lead like that, you can play a little bit more conservative. They were the aggressor. They stayed on top of things. They went for the fake field goal. You know, John Harbaugh was not sitting back. He was going for the kill. In the end, it worked out, luckily, for the Baltimore Ravens.
A couple things I did not like. I did not like the clock management by the 49ers at the end of the first half. I felt like they could have rushed a little bit more and had more of an opportunity to run the football once they had it second and two at Baltimore's 9 Once they ran it with Gore, they only had 20 seconds left. At that point, it's really hard to run it on third and two with only one timeout to go. So I thought they could have managed the clock better, a little bit better at the end of that first half if you're the San Francisco 49ers. And here's a bigger beef, and we'll finally get to it here, but this is what I'm sure everyone's talking about this morning. The final series for the San Francisco 49ers inside the Ravens' red zone. And I have a couple issues with this. Number one, and we'd love to get everybody's take on this as well. Lance and I happen to be in agreement on it. We both believe either a defensive holding call or a defensive pass interference call should have been called on that final play with Michael Crabtree getting held, obviously, by Jimmy Smith. And we'll go through the arguments. One, people say it's within 5 yards. A, it wasn't within 5 yards because the ball was snapped on that play
from the five-yard line.
It was fourth and five, and the hold happened in the end zone. So A is not within 5 yards, okay? B, people argue the pass is uncatchable. I don't think you know for sure that Crabtree can't jump for that or reach for it, catch it, and keep his feet in. Usually they only call uncatchable if the ball is yards and yards out of bounds and you don't have a chance of getting it. You can't guarantee me he couldn't have caught that ball and had his feet in at the same time, all right? Number three, even if you say that it was in 5 yards, which it wasn't, it was defensive holding, which means the holding was probably happening before the ball was in the air. So that's a pre-snap penalty. It erases the five-yard cushion. I mean, it's the pre-throw penalty. It erases the five-yard cushion. It doesn't matter if the quarterback has the ball or not. If you're holding, it's a hold. You can bump within 5 yards. You can't hold within 5 yards, okay? And number two, even if you argue the ball is uncatchable, since the held happened before the pass was released, that whole uncatchable argument gets thrown out anyway. And then people will argue, oh, well, you know, Crabtree was pushing off too. He had his hand on the face mask trying to push off. Well, he only started doing that until after Jimmy Smith had his arms around him and was grabbing the jersey underneath his arm. So, in my opinion, that is a textbook defensive holding call or pass interference. However you want to call it, you can. I think you can call it either way if you're the ref because the hold happened pre-throw and post-throw. That's how long the hold was taking place. And I know people make the argument you can't make these calls at the end of the games. The referees can't, you know, decide these games at the end. But by the official not throwing the flag, he's deciding the game. Whether he makes the call or not, the referee has to do his job. And if there's a textbook penalty in front of you, I don't care what time in the game it is, you have to throw the flag because that's your job. And the players have to abide by the rules no matter how much time is on the clock.
Yeah, whether it happens in the first quarter or the last quarter, it makes no difference. If a player breaks the rules, then he breaks the rules, and it's your job as an official to throw the flag. Whether or not you decide to do that is your prerogative, but you're still going to influence the outcome of the game, whether you throw it or not. I mean, we could sit here and debate it all day long. That non-call influenced the contest, regardless.
Yeah, the referee's
going to
be involved. The referee's involved. He's going to decide the game whether he throws the flag or if he doesn't. That's his job. It's the nature of the game.
And ultimately, that's what cost the San Francisco Niners at least another opportunity to try to get into the end zone.
A couple opportunities. You'd had a first and goal. If it was called pass interference at the one, if it was called defensive holding, it would have been half the distance to the goal. But here's my problem. All right, it starts first and goal on Baltimore 7. This is after Frank Gore had his 33-yard run. So Gore gets taken out of the game, I guess, to get a little bit of a breather, which, quite frankly, I have a difficult time fathoming, okay? I get it, you ran for 30 yards. You're Frank Gore. You're your team's number one back. Stay in the darn game, okay?
Well, they have other running backs, though, even if he's tired. Regardless if you're going to criticize him, well, LaMichael James can't carry the football. Now all of a sudden you don't have no options.
How many red zone inside the 10 carries has LaMichael James had?
Is he the
guy that's going
to
power
through
a tackle?
But I would feel confident with the reps that he's gotten throughout the course of the season.
You're Frank Gore. You stay in that football game, okay?
I just don't think that should have been the reason why they didn't run the football, though.
Well, they ran it with LaMichael James on the first play. But my point is that I'd rather have Frank Gore in the game there. He's your guy. He's gone either. He's your workhorse. Dude, you only ran it for 30 yards. It wasn't an 80-yard run, okay? Gut it up. Get in there. Stay in the game, all right? That's number one. But that's not the
argument. Was Jim Harbaugh asked about that? I'd actually be curious to see what the rationale was why Gore wasn't in there.
Usually these guys rotate out, for one. But again, end of the game here. I get it's a 30-yard run. He's a little bit winded. I understand that. But come on. Give me a break here, okay? I think Frank Gore can handle running a little bit at the 30 yards. Don't you? You know, it's not that big of a deal. Number one. Bigger deal, though. He runs for 2 yards, which is fine. So you have second and goal at the 5-yard line. Keep in mind, in the second half, The 49ers have run all over this Baltimore Ravens defense. I don't have a second half split here, I don't believe. But let me put it this way. In the first half, Frank Gore had run, and I'll bring that up, and then I can do some quick math for you. In the first half, Frank Gore had very little success on the ground. He ran just 11 times for 29 yards. He finished four with 110,
and that was
he had 81 yards on just 8 rushes in the second half. So Frank Gore was eating them up. Even if you take out that 30-yard run, that's still 7 rushes for 50 yards, okay? So Frank Gore's having an unbelievable second half. And that Niner offensive line, with their size and is their strength as a football team, is finally starting to dominate this game. You started running the read option, finally. What took the Niners so long to run that, by the way? It finally started running in the fourth quarter, and it's working. You have a mobile quarterback here, okay? You have your two biggest weapons, and you decide to throw the football 3 straight times from the 5-yard line when you know you're in 4-down territory. You have 3 opportunities to try to run the ball in from the 5-yard line. You're telling me the 49ers, that offensive line, that running back, and that quarterback, you can't rush the ball for 5 yards on 3 opportunities when that's the strength of your football team? And I realized they were going to run the ball Kaepernick on that play where they almost got called for the delay of game, but Jim Harbaugh called that good timeout to avoid it. That was going to be a design quarterback run, and from the looks of it, they might have gotten into the end zone or at least close to it. I get that, but after you call that timeout, you really can't try to run the ball again. You have to go to the air 3 straight times. And I get you rolled Kaepernick out to give him a run-pass option. I understand that. Where's the read option? Use the strength of your quarterback and your running back and their speed and their dual threat ability. Run it at least once. You can't pass it 3 straight times at the 5 when you have that offensive line and that running game. That, to me, is unacceptable. And if I'm a 49er fan, as mad as I am about that non-defensive holding pass interference call, I'm more furious at my coaching staff for not trying to run the ball at least once from the 5-yard line, second and goal at the 5.
And some of those throws weren't even into the end zone. Some of them were to Crabtree when he was about 2 yards shy of the end zone. So it's like, I mean, what are you going to do at that point? You're still going to be shy. You're going to have to run another play anyway.
And Crabtree,
so you might as well take your chances
too
on the ground.
He had to drop when they tried to pass to him at the 2.
And Kaepernick, I thought his mobility was a huge factor in the second half. I mean, Baltimore looked lost. Those linebackers could not chase him down.
No.
You would think that you'd try to at least create some type of open space off the sideline to at least utilize his legs to maybe get in the end zone or make a diving play and hustle to get something. So it was a little bit surprising that they pretty much had 3 consecutive rollouts, I should really say, where they were targeting Crabtree in the end zone. The last one, you can make the argument there was that holding call, but the prior 2, there was no way Crabtree was going to get in the end zone because Baltimore was all over him. And not to maybe try to take a target at Randy Moss. If you're going to throw, maybe use one of your biggest targets. You know, Moss, to me, should have been a little bit more involved in the game plan. He was relatively quiet.
On that last play, I get it. The Ravens had an all-out blitz coming in there. I think they rushed 6 guys, maybe even 7. I have to look at the play again. I did not break that down specifically. But the 49ers screwed up their protection. They let a free rusher come at the quarterback from the inside, which is never what you want to do. If you're going to let a free rusher, let him make his way around the outside of the tackle. It takes him longer to get there, okay? They let a free rusher come in from the inside of that line and get a free run at Kaepernick. He had no choice but to throw that fade pattern, which we've talked about this during the year. Both of us think that's a low percentage play. I don't like that at all, period. But run the football, Lance. Just run the football or try to get it to Vernon Davis, who disappeared, by the way, after having a big first half. Again, he missed that one deep pass down the sideline.
But he has disappeared throughout the course of this season. So that is not necessarily a surprising development. I think what is surprising, they were riding Frank Gore. They were riding Colin Kaepernick in the second half. They get into the red zone where they had struggled earlier in the game. And now all of a sudden they want to get creative and they want to constantly air it out to Michael Crabtree, who, granted, made a lot of big catches throughout the course of this contest. But when you are 5 yards out, and you have 182 yards on the ground, you've outrun your opponent by nearly 100 yards, what is the crime in trying to at least pound the ball on the ground and give yourself at least one additional opportunity to see what you can get out of that? And if worst-case scenario you can't get in, then you can at least, off the read option, utilize Kaepernick's speed. which had worked so effectively. I mean, he ran that touchdown from 15 yards out. Baltimore, everybody on that Ravens team was on the left side, was on the right side of the field, excuse me. He ran left. There was not even a linebacker behind him that was in the vicinity to perhaps trip him up. They were completely caught off guard.
All right. I want to take you through a couple plays here, okay? Here we go. The Niners, and we're going to get to your calls in just a second, guys. I know you're holding on. We'll get to you in just a minute, I promise you. Hugo and Jay, just hold on one more second. I want to build on this for a moment before we get to you, all right? I want to take you through the Niners' drives in that second half. The first drive where they had to punt, they tried to pass it two out of three times and ran it once, all right? Here's the first Niner touchdown to cut it to 28-13. Kaepernick scramble for five. Kaepernick scramble for 15. Gore for two. Incomplete pass. Short pass for 9 yards. Davis for 18. Krejci for 31. That was a pass-heavy drive. But then let's get to the next two Niner scoring drives here. Gore for three. Kaepernick deep pass. That was off the fumble. So they kick a field goal right there. Fourth quarter. Here's the one big scoring drive where they get down the field. It is a 76-yard drive in five plays. Gore for five. Kaepernick to Randy Moss. That was for 32. Gore for 21. Kaepernick for 15. Kaepernick for 15. And then on the final drive to put them in the red zone to give it a shot, Gore for eight. Kaepernick for eight. A pass for 24. Gore for 33. LaMichael James for two. Then they get at the 5-yard line and decide not to run the ball anymore. I didn't get it. And I'm a guy that picked the Ravens, so I was on record thinking the Ravens were going to win. I didn't have a rooting interest in this game. I just thought once you get it at the 5 with the way the 49ers play, you got to run the football.
And that's a fair criticism right now. In 2020 hindsight land, it's fair. You know, you got down to the red zone thanks to your running game, and then you decided to abandon the running game when you probably should have used that because that would have been the effective game plan. Perhaps Greg Roman, the offensive coordinator, saw something that he felt would be favorable for Michael Crabtree.
Well, and in fairness, the Ravens did show a lot of guys in the line of scrimmage a couple of those plays. They showed blitz. A couple of run blitzes is going to make it hard for you to run the ball there at times.
But then fake the run then. Try to sell it at least
free up guys. They certainly had opportunities to be a little bit more creative rather than just run three pass plays, in my opinion. Or then, you know, run a little counter play. Get Gore into space. Run a pitch. If you run a run blitz up the middle and you run a pitch play outside, you can beat that run blitz. There are a lot of ways you can do that. But I just think you got to try to run the ball a little bit more inside that 5-yard line. That's all I'm saying. 201-939-4513. Let's go to your calls in the game and go to Hugo in New Jersey first. Hugo, what's up?
Hey, good morning, guys. A couple of comments about the game and then a couple of comments about the Giants, if I may. I agree with you guys about the non-hole call. And, you know, what makes it more egregious is the fact that in the Ravens' last drive, they called similar contact as pass interference of Colliver against Bolden. I mean, in the very least, the refs, you know, I understand you're in a big spot, but you got to call it even because,
yep.
You know, that last drive was also a big spot as well, and they called it. So it kept the drive alive and therefore forced the Niners to come down and score a touchdown to take the lead. So I think there's some criticism there of the refs. You know, as a general matter, you know, I really think the 49ers have the better team and the better personnel. I mean, they put up the Niners put up a lot of yards on the Ravens' defense. I think their lack of foot speed in the back seven was kind of evident in the game. But honestly, I just think that the Ravens did a better job of coaching. You know, they didn't coach scared and were aggressive throughout. And, you know, when the Niners got down there in the green zone, as Coach Coughlin likes to call it, you know, they brought the blitz. So they used the back line and the sidelines in those tight spaces to their advantage and really tightened up the box by bringing blitzes and forcing the issue against the young quarterback. I think in the first half, the Niners kind of, you know, tried to rely on their front four for a pass rush, you know, played some zone. I guess Sims commented that when they were aggressive, they were winning. And I think they got a lot more aggressive in the second half, but the deficit was too much to overcome. So I think lesson learned, you know, you can't play too vanilla, right, in the NFL today. You got to mix it up. You can't coach scared. So kudos to the Ravens for a job well done.
And Hugo, I think you hit it right on the nose. I know you had a point about the Giants, so we'll let you get to that. But you mentioned the youth of the quarterback for the San Francisco 49ers, and that showed in the first half. Also, remember with how he handled certain timeout situations, the Niners wasted some valuable timeouts. There was one play where the clock was running down and Kaepernick didn't understand the play that was being called in through his helmet, so he wasted a timeout when the smart thing would have been audible. Call something, just so that you don't have to sacrifice a timeout, because had they had an additional timeout later on in the game, maybe they have more time on the clock to get off a Hail Mary to potentially win the
contest. More than that, you might have a full 35 seconds there based on the play clock and run a couple plays to get down there. Ted Ginn runs that ball back if they decide to still take the safety,
to get in field goal range, which
they might not do. You can get the ball, run it back to the 45, run a couple plays, and Akers has such a big leg inside. Akers can kick a 65-yard field goal and have a legitimate shot of making it. As bad of a year as he's had, he has such a big leg, he can make that long field goal. And Kaepernick, it's not like they broke the huddle late either. Kaepernick was at that line of scrimmage for 7 or 8 seconds, and they just did not get the playoff. And you know what? He's a rookie quarterback. That's going to happen. That's the price you have for playing a rookie. But still, I'm with Lance. I was screaming at the TV, get the playoff, get the playoff, get the playoff.
Do something.
You know, guys, and even in the last play of the game, I think Kaepernick panicked a little bit when he saw the blitz. It looked like he just chucked the ball up. I mean, if he had gotten that ball maybe closer to Crabtree's, Crabtree's hands, perhaps, you know, you could have drawn the call, but that throw was essentially out of bounds. And I think what shocked me a little bit, I have to go back and look at the tape, but you know, the blitz was coming from his left side, right, kind of middle to left. And here's a right-handed quarterback, right? So yeah. I thought that was a mistake on the part of the Ravens. And I think, actually, if he looped around the end, he could have ran it in, because Jimmy Smith, the corner, obviously had his back to him, was playing man, and was all tied up with the receiver. So, you know, or at least he could have started going that way and then put the defensive backs in kind of no man's land. Should I come up and tackle him, or should I stay in coverage? So he didn't really take advantage of the pressure the Ravens were bringing in that spot.
Yeah,
but, he's a young quarterback. I think he has a bright future.
Yeah, Hugo, that's also a spot, I think, too, when you're face guarding like that, instead of throwing the corner fade, you could try to throw
back
the back
shoulder
fade there as well. You got it.
Yep. Well, now that we're fully into the off season, you know, it's, I think, time to take a step back. You know, I think about the Giants. You know, we do have some great strengths. I mean, you know, from great front office and ownership, tremendous head coach, you know, franchise quarterback. And, you know, I say the offense is excellent. We've talked about before their rankings, but, you know, I thought about it more broadly. And look at the job that offensive coaching staff does on player development. I mean, I started to make a quick list. Guys like, you know, free agents, Hinoski, Booth. You know, we took Ballard and made him a player. Martellus Bennett was a joke in Dallas. He became a productive. But Bradshaw was a seventh-round pick. Cruz, Hickson, free agent. You know, there's not a lot of first-round picks on our offense. I mean, it's Eli and Hakeem Nicks. Those are the only first-round picks. But these guys just do a remarkable job of player development. You can even see it with David Wilson and with Reuben Randall. You know, those are players to get excited about. They really have a culture, I think, of excellence on the offensive end. And when I think about it, again, more broadly, you know, Coach Coughlin comes from the offensive side, and I think his influence is felt on the offense. You know, if I think of the Giants' offense and I look back at what they did in Jacksonville, you know, I know the philosophy, right? It's balance. Remember in Jacksonville you had Fred Taylor. And then deep down the field passing, a lot of option routes. Yes, some of the routes Hakeem Nicks run are exactly the routes Jimmy Smith runs. So I think there's just sort of a conviction on offense, and, you know, they pick the right players to develop for that system. Now, you know, defense has just been a consistent problem, I think, since Coach Coughlin was here. And I'm not sure we have a philosophical conviction, right? I mean, we had Tim Lewis. He brought some Pittsburgh Steeler, I guess, concepts. Then we had Spags, and he brought some Jim Johnson concepts. And I'm not really quite sure what Perry Fuel runs. Is it like a modified Tampa 2 or like a Bender Don't Break? I'm not sure what it is, right? I don't have a real good sense for what he's trying to run. I mean, we try to get pressure with the front four and cover, I guess.
Well, I can tell you from Perry Fuel's reputation when he was in Buffalo, he played a lot of cover 2, a lot of deep safety, and was very much a bend but don't break defense that was also heavy on turnover. So to me, I would compare Perry Fuel's system in a lot of ways to Monty Kiffin's system, to Lovie Smith's system, where you try to get turnovers, you run a lot of cover two, but he mixes in, I think, a lot more man-to-man principles than those two other guys from time to time. But yes, correct, you're right. Perryfield does not bring a lot of pressure. He tries to get pressure with the front four, much like the Monty Kiffins and the Lovie Smiths of the world do, and he, generally speaking, he's been a bend-but-don't-break type of guy that looks for the big play to create turnover. So if I was to categorize this system, Hugo, that's how I would do it.
Yeah, you know, do we even have the personnel to run that defense? I mean, that defense historically requires a very fast middle linebacker who can get back into zones. The Giants, you know, haven't had that, right? I mean, we went from Antonio Pierce. I mean, it seems to me like we almost have the personnel to run Spags' system, the press corners, you know, the bigger defensive ends, the bigger defensive tackles, the smart kind of thumping middle linebacker. So it's a real disconnect on defense. My concern here is that I think the offense is going to be excellent next year, but you know, we just don't have a core defensive philosophy. And when you don't have that, maybe what the front office does compared to what you know the coaches want to do, just don't seem to have a real consistency. It's unfortunate, right? Because we're sitting here and we're just saying, is it coaching? Is it player personnel? It might be player personnel. Some. But the Giants have really invested most of their first-round picks since 2006 in defensive players. In certain years, it's been the first and second-round pick. And on top of that, we've invested a lot of money in high-priced free agents like Canty and Boley and Roll to bolster the defense. So, you know, when I think about, you look at the offense, two first-round picks, you look at the defense, they've gotten the infusion of talent and they've underperformed, which is really, really frustrating.
Well, I think injuries has contributed to that, too, over the last couple of seasons.
I agree.
I mean, that's something that you can't overlook. Because even though you've had all of those big-name free agents and you've had some talented rookies, they haven't all necessarily been on the field at the same time.
Especially injuries in the defensive backfield where the injuries have really caught up with the team. And Hugo, finally, remember, the defensive line just simply did not play up to their potential this year. You talk about Jason Pierre-Paul, a first-round pick. That's great. He didn't play like a first-round pick this year. He just had 6.5 sacks. You know, OC's getting older. Tuck's getting older. Canty missed half the season. And you mentioned the linebacker is not designed for Perryfield's system. I'll just say this. Remember, the Giants very rarely are in their base 4-3 defense. They play nickel way more than 50% of the time, and they're in dime probably another 25% of the time. And in those packages, at least when he's healthy, and Lance mentioned the injuries, Jaquan Williams has the speed and the mobility, and so does Michael Boley for that matter, to get into coverage and play those zone defenses in the middle of the field, or man-to-man, which again, like I said, Perryfield mixes in a lot more man-to-man than some of those other guys that I mentioned.
Well, you know, I've called them gimmicks in the past, and maybe that's just a symptom, right, of not having the right player. So if you had a fast linebacker, you wouldn't have to take a big safety and kind of play that big nickel. And, you know, I think the Giants really need to reassess what they want to do on defense. I'm not completely blaming it on Perryfield. I like a defense that, you know, dictates and is aggressive and has a different mentality. I mean, the only thing I remember about Perryfield's defense is when we went up there in 2007, Ahmad Bradshaw and Brandon Jacobs going wild and just, you know, killing that defense on the ground. Sounds familiar, right? But we'll see what happens. But I'm really, really concerned that, you know, we got another 5-6 good years with Eli here, and if we don't do something to fix that defense, really the only time we've had some sustained excellence was 2007-2008 with Spags. So we got to do something on the defensive side.
All right, Hugo, thanks so much for weighing in this morning here on Big Blue Kickoff. Appreciate it. 201-939-4513
Good call, Hugo.
The telephone number. And he's right. Perryfield's system, I would even throw out the other term that I like to use, opportunistic.
Yes.
Tries to put guys in positions to capitalize off of turnovers, which happened earlier this season.
Well, make plays.
The problem is if those turnovers are not there and your defense is not opportunistic, then you get the results that were showcased the latter part of the season where you give up the big plays, you can't make consistent stops, and if you don't have a pass rush, who's rescuing you at that point? It's
a
problem.
At that point, you have to rely on your defensive backs to be able to cover their guys.
Well, you have to rely on individual battles. Right. But if the players are not winning those individual battles and you're not getting the turnovers, you run out of options to turn to, essentially.
See, to me, when people want to blame the defensive coordinator, I raise an eyebrow, and here's why. When I think it's a system, when I think it's the coordinator's fault and not the player's fault, I see guys running free in the secondary. And that's something we saw under Bill Sheridan. That's why I think he lost his job a few years ago. But this year with the Giants, I don't think we saw guys just running free all over the place with nobody on him. Did we see some guys get beat and make some mistakes and not play well and get beat by the guy across him? Sure, we saw that plenty of times. But I don't think we saw a lot of plays where you're just sitting there like, oh, my God, who was supposed to cover that guy? I don't think we saw that quite as much. And quite frankly, I don't think we saw that quite as much this year as we saw in the beginning of the season last year when you had a lot of situations, or even the year before, where you're like, who was supposed to cover that guy? What happened on that play? Like the quote-unquote miscommunication that was famous.
The guys looking at
each
other.
In 2011, we saw that a lot less this year, I thought, than what we saw last season and the season before.
Yeah, you did not see much of two guys after a play looking at one another and saying to themselves,
waving their arms around.
Were you supposed to go left? I was supposed to go right. But that was extremely evident during the Super Bowl season.
Oh, no question. And I think when that happens a lot, I think that's when you can start talking about the coordinator, because that shows that guys don't know what they're supposed to do, and that could come back to coaching. But I don't think we saw that this year.
Not at all. And the other thing, getting back to Hugo's point, talking about, you know, didn't really understand what the identity of this defense is. That's why when we feel calls throughout the offseason about how the Giants should change defensive coordinators, that's the last thing you want to do if you're having trouble with the identity of your defense, because as you go throughout Tim Lewis, Spags, Sheridan, Perry Fuel, how many more defensive coordinators does this team need to go
back
through?
To Tim Lewis if you want.
You can't keep juggling these guys. Then you're going to need another year of adjustment for these veteran players even to digest the new system.
And, folks, I don't want to get ahead of myself here, but Perry Fuel was a head coach candidate last year after the Giants won the Super Bowl. Just say it. People talk to him. It's not like he's not a, you know.
It's not like he doesn't have a good reputation.
It's not like he's not a well-respected coach around the league here, all right? He was getting head coach interviews. And he was an interim head coach with the Bills. So this guy, he's not some, you know, Johnny Come Lately that doesn't know what he's doing. 201-939-4513. Let's go to Jay in Brooklyn. Jay, what's going on, pal?
Yeah, what's up, man? Good morning.
Good morning, Jay. How are you?
I'm good. Yeah, man. I just don't know how to feel about the Super Bowl this morning. I know, understand that 49ers come back, but I don't cheer for none of them, and I don't care about none of them. But I just disappointed in the 49ers, because I didn't really think they'd come to play the first 2.5 quarters, because they was down 28-6. And I think if that power didn't go out and Ravens didn't throw off their rhythm, I think the game would have been more uglier than what it really shows last night. And people saying that call, yes, maybe the ref should have called it, but 49ers have nobody to blame but themselves for this game. The refs didn't give away the game. They give away their home game because, as I said, they didn't play in the first 2.5 quarters.
That's fair.
Yeah, but, Jay, I find it hard to believe that the power outage disrupted the rhythm of the race. I mean, did the power outage force Ray Rice to fumble the football? Did the power outage force Sam Cook to have a bad punt? I mean, you have to give the Niners a little bit of credit for just executing and coming up with some game-changing plays, and that's a big reason why they came back.
Yeah, but where was that in the first 2.5 quarters? If they had that same style of playing, I mean, we wouldn't even have been in this conversation this morning about the ref didn't blow calls on whatsoever. So even whatever the case is, they have nobody to blame but themselves, because all year they're talking about this is ours and whatever. You get there now, you take it. You say it's yours, so take it, because you were the better team. Because to be honest, San Francisco was clearly the better team than the Baltimore Ravens.
On paper, at least,
so
yes, I'll give you that.
If it was yours, you should have taken it.
Well, listen, the best comparison that I could give you, Jay, is look at the Giants last season. For some reason, they were their best when their backs were against the wall. And everybody would wonder, why did the Giants all of a sudden come to play in the fourth quarter when they're down by a touchdown or two? And they did that time and time again, and they delivered. So maybe you could say the Niners finally got a sense of urgency amongst each other when they were down by so much, and that raised the level of execution because they knew they had their backs against the wall and they had to make plays. I mean, that's the only thing that I could turn to as to why there was such a difference in the level of execution from one half to the other. But you're right. They could have made better plays in the first half, and the game wouldn't have been out of hand, and maybe they would have been within striking distance in the second quarter, the third quarter, as opposed to having to mount this huge miracle comeback, which they were able to put together, but there just was not enough gas in the tank come the fourth quarter that they were able to overcome all of the issues that were at the forefront in that first half.
I just think they was too cocky. I think they walk in there with it like, oh, we're going to beat the Ravens, we are the better team. Because San Francisco is a team like that. They are a cocky team.
Well, so are the Ravens.
And sometimes that is going to catch up to you. You come back from 17 down from Atlanta, you think you can do it again? No. It's going to catch up to you just like the Giants.
Absolutely.
It catch up to them that they didn't make the playoff because they just sit back and relax like, we're going to beat all these teams. We're going to get in the playoff because they have that mentality that they can do it. And I think some of that got to do with the San Francisco 49ers.
Oh, no, Jay, I agree with you, but I'll say this too. I think a lot of that first half had to do with the two turnovers, which obviously short-circuited two 49er drives. Look, in the first half, on the 49ers' second drive of the game, they managed to drive all the way down and get a field goal after they went three and out on their first drive after a penalty on that. All right, in their next drive, LaMichael James fumbles the football. On their following drive, they go three and out when they're jammed inside their own 10-yard line. So they only had, and then they got a field goal on that final drive at a half. So their own mistakes, whether it was the LaMichael James fumble or the Colin Kaepernick interception, and frankly, Kaepernick just wasn't sharp in the first half, we talked about too. That's why the Niners had such a bad first half. Their own mistakes, whether it was penalties or turnovers or their quarterback not being sharp. I don't think they were cocky or weren't ready to play. I just think they made mistakes. I don't think they're, like you said, arrogance has anything to do with LaMichael James fumbling the football or Colin Kaepernick airmailing a pass.
I just think these making mistakes is so, like, played out, because every team make mistakes. Baltimore made a lot of mistakes.
Jay, the 49ers made two turnovers. The Baltimore Ravens just made one. That's a big difference in the game right there.
The ball.
Exactly, and you make mistakes. That's my point. Mistakes in the moment on any given play can have a huge impact on the game, and I don't think an individual mistake by an individual player necessarily reflects on an entire team's mental state and attitude heading into a game.
I appreciate that, man.
All right, Jay, I appreciate it.
Thanks
for the
much.
Call. Jay always gets your, like, heart pounding, Lance. I like it.
Oh, Jay, you know, amps up the show a little bit.
I love Jay. He does a good job.
They also had actually back-to-back turnovers, John. After the LaMichael James fumble, the Ravens then get the football back, the Dennis Pitta touchdown, and then on the ensuing kickoff, Kaepernick's very first play, he throws the interception. So, you know, that killed momentum. They barely had the football.
Yeah, well, look at it this way. In the first half, the Ravens were leading 7-3, okay? The Niners get the ball with 14:52 to go in the second quarter. Colin Kaepernick drives it down with a series of short passes and runs all the way down to the Ravens' 24-yard line where they have it first and 10. Only down 7-3. That's when LaMichael James fumbled the football. The Ravens answer. They go all the way down the field, score a touchdown. So that's a 14-point potential swing right there. You go from the 49ers heading into the end zone, maybe taking a 10-7 lead. At the very least,
7-6.
It's 7-6.
Correct.
Instead, the Ravens get the ball back, and they drive it 75 yards for a touchdown. And wham, bam, it's 14-3. Then Kaepernick throws the pick because he's probably feeling a lot of pressure being down a couple of scores. Tries to make a play down the field that's not there. A little too much adrenaline. Airmails the football. Ravens get it. They have an opportunity to kick the field goal. That's when they try the fake, which I thought, by the way, was a bad fake. To me, with the Ravens and the way they play, good defense. Niners, not necessarily a pass-first comeback type of offense. You kick the field goal there, you get the points, especially on a 4th-and-9. If it's 4th-and-3 or maybe 4th-and-4 and the kicker has to run a little bit less to get the first down, I'll buy it. I think it's a better move. 4th-and-9, I think, in that spot, it was a mistake.
Well, take the points when you could get them. Then you would have been up 14. You would have been up 2 touchdowns late in the second half. And the Niners didn't wind up doing much of anything the rest of that half. So clearly, if I'm in a position to cushion my lead, I'm going to take the conservative approach. And I'm just going to take the 3 points, be content with that, given that they already had the momentum well in their hands at that point. I don't think it was a risk that was necessary to take. Fortunately for Baltimore, it did not come back to haunt them. But, you know, you have an additional 3 points. Maybe the Niners are not even in a position to go ahead late in the contest.
I just think 9 yards is too much to ask a kicker to run for. Again, if you're asking to get 2 or 3, fine. 4 or 5, I'll buy that. 9? And by the way, we even brought this up. What a great play by Patrick Willis to get out
there,
engaging Dixon in the block, carrying that play all the way to the sideline. forced the kicker to go inside eventually, and that's when the rest of the defense closed down and made the play. That was an unbelievably good play by Patrick Willis.
And getting back to your point, I mean, you can get the 9 yards if maybe you go for a passing play as opposed to a run. I mean, even though you fake it, doesn't mean you have to run the football.
Of course.
You know, they could have dropped Cook or Tucker back, and they could have tried to throw the football. But essentially, they decided that they felt that they had a good angle on the left side. And unfortunately,
they got
Patrick
8 yards.
Hustled.
They got 8 yards.
1 yard
Patrick
shy.
Patrick Willis got out there, made a good play. But look, the Niners defense just didn't get the job done. They had a number of opportunities here to close this game out, or rather not close this game out, but really give the Niners a chance to win in the second half. And just go back to it, the Niners cut the game to 28-23 late in the third quarter. And they're kicking off. Baltimore takes over on their own 20-yard line, and they allow the Ravens to go 71 yards on 12 plays and kick a field goal. They did a good job keeping the Ravens out of the end zone. They had a second goal on the one, but still, they allow a 5-minute, 16-second drive all the way down to the one-yard line to go 75 yards. Now, the Niners answer, they score a touchdown. They fail in that two-point conversion, the miscommunication between Moss and Kaepernick on the hot route, when, again, they allowed a free rusher to get right to Colin Kaepernick, had to get rid of the football in the all-out blitz. So it's 31-29, and the Niners defense with another opportunity to get the Ravens off the field and, God forbid, give the 49ers some decent field position in this game so their offense doesn't have to go 70, 80 yards to get a touchdown. But no, they allow the Ravens to take 5 minutes 38 seconds off of the clock and go 59 yards on 10 plays and kick another field goal. Again, a good job in the red zone keeping the Ravens out of the end zone. But because of that drive, the Niners now need a touchdown instead of a field goal on that final drive in order to tie or win the football game. And for a team that's the defense has been the strength over the course of the year. Granted, their offense in the playoffs has been fantastic, averaging nearly 500 yards per game. That's great. They had 9 yards in this game?
468, yeah.
Also fantastic. But that defense is the bread and butter of the 49ers, and they could not get the stop when they needed it in the second half of that game.
And you have to give credit to the Ravens' offensive line, which I think did a great job protecting Joe Flacco. You did not see the linebackers get to him more often than not because that Ravens' offensive line lived up to the hype. You know, Matt Burke, a veteran center. We talked about Marshall Yanda. They moved Michael Orr around. It was a game of musical chairs for the most part throughout this season, and they hung through that. They battled it out, and that 49ers front seven is the strength of the defense. That's where you need to be specific. The defense overall, okay, but that secondary has a lot of flaws, and that was showed yesterday in that Super Bowl. And the other thing about that drive where you said all they needed to do was get a stop, get Kaepernick back the football. Two penalties were committed on that drive that put ultimately Baltimore up 34-29.
And that was a good call on the Culver pass interference.
There was
the
contact on
that. He hooked his whole arm. That was a good call.
That's a golden opportunity for San Francisco.
Get
it's
off the field.
3rd and 9 at the Baltimore 22.
Gotta get off the field.
You've got to get them onto the sidelines to get Kaepernick back on the field that you have your offense in an opportunity to potentially go ahead.
If you're a top defense, you have the other team at 3rd and 9 on their own 21-yard line, get off the field.
Now, the second penalty wasn't necessarily a killer because it was 3rd and 7 and Ahmad Brooks was called for defensive offsides, so it only set up a 3rd and 2 and Flacco threw low to Dennis Pitta.
Well, the Pitta still should have made that catch.
It was a catchable ball. You're 100% right.
Pitta should have made that catch.
So they held them to a field goal, but you're looking at it, if Culver doesn't make that penalty, this is not a 5-minute 38 drive. So the Niners have a lot more time. There's not as much urgency. Maybe they can get a little bit more clever on offense. You have a little bit more flexibility if you don't commit those penalties.
I mentioned field position. Average starting field position for the 49ers are on 28-yard line. And here are their scoring drives. They had to go 62 yards just to get a field goal. They had to go 56 yards just to get a field goal. They had to go 80 yards to get a touchdown. They had to go 76 yards to get a touchdown. They had to go 75 yards, and they turned it over on downs in the final possession. They got very little help from their special teams at the 49ers. A, of course, giving up the Jones touchdown, but again, not giving their offense, and take your juniors, a good kick returner, any sort of help in terms of field position the whole game.
Whereas look at what Jacoby Jones did for the Baltimore offense.
Granted, their starting field position was also not very good, only their own 28-yard line, but he did have the kickoff return.
And he had a 30-yard return in the second quarter, which certainly helped them at least get back to about the 22-yard line. You know, even when he didn't make game-changing plays, he got them out of a position where maybe they would have had their backs against their own end zone.
Well, and look at it this way, too. And this has to do with defense field position. If you stop a team three and out, they have to punt. You get the ball in decent field position here. And the Ravens had a 46-yard touchdown drive. They had a 56-yard touchdown drive. And then, of course, you had the Jacoby Jones kickoff return. Then they had a 40-yard field goal drive. The Niners' offense did not have those luxuries of those short scoring drives. They just didn't.
Well, the only luxury they had was when Ted Ginn had that great return off a botched punt, and that enabled San Francisco to knock right on the door.
Exactly. And then, of course, you had the kick return at the end of the game, which was a good one, but certainly not enough. I wanted to see some more lateraling and pitching, by the way. I was a little disappointed that it wasn't like a full crazy like lateral pitch thing going on. Those are always fun.
Well, they saved their creativity for offense at times, with the exception of that final drive.
Hey guys, thanks for holding. I know we've been talking a lot here. I'm going to get to your calls. We'll kind of get through you guys as quickly as possible. Mike in Richmond, you're on for a while. We didn't get to. If you want to call back, we'll get you right back up if you're still out there, okay? Let's go to Jonah in New Jersey. Jonah, what's up?
Hey, how are you guys?
Good morning, Jonah.
Hi. I was wondering, why are the Giants, I read on ESPN.com, but they're not trying to go as hard on Cruz because they're trying to keep Hakeem Nicks. Meanwhile, the 2 years Cruz has been there, he's had better numbers than Hakeem.
Now, Jonah, I remember this, though. You read that, and it was on another website. It was from an independent media organization, and I think we all know that specific organization, ESPN, has been wrong in the past, for one. And number two, remember this, too. Just a couple days before, there was a little back and forth between, you know, John Mara, you saw his quotes, and you saw Victor Cruz, where there is some type of stalemate now, apparently, on the contract and negotiations with Victor Cruz. So there's going to be a lot of posturing going on between the two sides here. You know, maybe the Giants think if, you know, something gets leaked and, they're more important to sign Hakeem Nicks, then Victor Cruz might feel the heat to lower his contract demand so they can get a deal done with Victor Cruz. So at this point of the year, there's a lot of noise out there coming from everybody, from teams, from players, from agents. And you got to understand, a lot of time the noise isn't necessarily fact. It's done with a purpose to get where that particular individual wants to go.
Yeah. So you think Cruz will get a deal done and remain in New York?
If I had to go place a bet in Vegas and say, you know, are you going to bet that Victor Cruz is going to be a Giant and have a new contract within the next 2 months, I'd bet yes.
All right. Thanks. I appreciate it.
Jonah, anytime, man. And you got to be careful. And, you know, when we're not really into the offseason yet, but when you do, you're going to hear a lot of rumors out there, Lance. You know, one side putting something out there anonymously, another side putting something out there maybe with a weird source to somebody close to a player says this. And everything's done with a purpose. It's not necessarily fact.
Media is a very powerful tool.
Yep.
And
it's
agents,
a weapon.
Members of the front office, players are not stupid. They know how to work the system. So that's what I think you can read into this at this point. Still a lot of time. Remember, free agency does not go into effect until March 12th. The new calendar year starts March 1st, but you cannot sign a free agent until March 12th. You have until 4 p.m. that day to give your offers into restricted free agents, take care of your exclusive rights players. So there's still plenty of time for them to get a deal done with Victor Cruz. There's going to be a lot of negotiating going on over the next month and a half. And if they're the Giants, they're going to try to do the right thing to lock up a receiver who's done a lot for this offense. I'm sure Eli Manning is campaigning to tell them, listen, guys, we got to get one of my favorite targets locked up, because at the end of the day, Hakeem Nicks makes Victor Cruz better. Victor Cruz makes Hakeem Nicks better. The two go hand in hand. If you only have one in the equation, that's going to alter the offensive flow, and I don't think the Giants want to be put in that position.
Let's go to Vic in Connecticut. Vic, good morning. You're on Big Blue Kickoff Live on Giants.com. How are you?
Good morning. How are you?
What's up, Vic?
Good to see that the Super Bowl the last few years has turned into a game.
Yeah.
You know, it was a lot of years that it was not a game. So it was really kind of fun last night to watch a good game.
We're on a good run here, Vic. We've had a lot of good games in a row.
Yeah, we really have. I think probably the last 5 or 6 years anyway that I can remember. You know, I admire Baltimore. You know, I remember back in 2000 when the Giants played them, and actually I try to forget that. But, you know, they're just a team that just comes out and punches you right in the mouth, it seems like. It seems like they're big, they're tough. Even their big guys, they run really well. Something I think that, you know, the Giants can improve upon a little bit, too. You know, I think it was a game of two halves. And I think it happens in basketball a lot, too. Like one of the callers was saying, why did it take so long? I think sometimes teams just take time to catch up gained some urgency and whatever. So I think it was just – I don't think it was the power outage at all. I mean, there was an impact there, but I just believe it was –
That's a stretch, though.
Yeah. You know, everyone – and that's the thing, you know, Vic. Everyone's making a big deal about the power outage this morning. Lance and I didn't even bring it up off the top of the show because both of us really think that's an easy turning point to point to. But the Ravens could have easily come out and played well after that power outage, and the Niners could have easily come out and played just as poorly after the power outage. And it's really more, to me, a coincidence and a circumstance than it is reality.
Yeah, and I think, you know, the conspiracy theories will probably show up over the course of the week, saying they saw, you know, a San Francisco electrical company climbing out of a manhole. You know, something crazy will come out of this. I'm not sure what it is, but I think one thing that probably went, and I think I agree with one of the callers, too, that San Francisco reminds me of the Giants just in a different way. They start slow in some of their games, and they finish fast, and the Giants start fast in their season and kind of twiddle, you know, go off in the end. But one point I think that kind of gets missed is I think Joe Flacco did a really tremendous job yesterday. I mean, he reminds me a lot of Eli in his demeanor a little bit. He just kind of sits on the sidelines and kind of minds his own business. He's a really good deep thrower. He seems fairly cerebral. It just seems like he gets it all of a sudden. He sees the field. The game has slowed down for him, you know, all those cliches, because he made some really good throws, and I think he's really come around. Win or lose yesterday, he's going to get himself one heck of a contract. I think Kaepernick played well as he started to go, but you could see the frustration in his face that he just shook his head a lot, where Flacco just kind of shook it off and kind of walked away. But, you know, they got to the NFC Championship game last year and lost. Good for us. Got to the Super Bowl this year and lost, which means they kind of took another step. So, you know, I'm happy for them. But, you know, lost in all of this is the most important part of the night, which was the entertainment. I can't imagine getting three better people than Jennifer Hudson, Alicia Keys, and Beyonce to be on.
They were all they were all excellent. I agree, though. Alicia Keys was a little bit long with the anthem. It was done well, and it was done traditionally. It wasn't a whole lot of flourish, but a 2-minute and 40-second national anthem, you know, that usually takes around 1:40, 1:45. That's she stretched that a little bit. Let's be honest.
I agree. I just think three really classy women that really did a good job. And I was kind of tired of the geriatric, you know, generation we've had the last few years.
Yeah, I think we all were.
Yeah. So, but you know, I love Alicia Keys, and she did kind of tell the crowd to be quiet. She was not done. She made that very evident too. So no, I think in its entirety, a great game to end the Super Bowl and the season. I look forward to seeing what the Giants do and whatever, and talking to you guys in the off season as long as you'll have me.
Yeah, Vic, we're here for you, man. Feel free to give us a call.
Appreciate it, Vic. Thanks so much. And there were no wardrobe malfunctions too.
Thank goodness.
So that's also
if there was another wardrobe malfunction, we would have been back next year. I mean, they would have dug up a corpse to put up on that stage rather than risk another wardrobe more malfunction.
Though it will be interesting for the entertainment next season, because if the conditions...
Charlie Chaplin would have been up there at halftime next year or something like that.
If the conditions are not too warm, which we're assuming, the outfits may get a little bit interesting.
So theoretically, what you're saying, they should go for a male performer next year.
They may want to, you know. Somebody's going to want to stay
or
warm.
Or someone that normally wouldn't provide the eye candy you're looking for. Well, honestly, do you know who the... I mean, if you really want to decide... based on where the game is, who should perform at the Super Bowl?
No,
next
I don't
year.
Think they're going to do that. But I think that the entertainer is going to have to make some decisions depending on how long they're going to perform.
But based on where the game is next year, the obvious guy to do halftime is Springsteen.
I'm not even going to
comment. Or Bon Jovi.
Not even going to comment.
Actually, you know what? Because Springsteen was recent. He did it recently. Mortensen makes a good point, who took over Miller, by the way. So if you mentioned that's who we're talking about if we mentioned Mortensen. But could be Bon Jovi. Could be Billy Joel too. I think Bon Jovi's more modern. He still has like some top 20, top 10 hits here and there on the pop stations. If I was to place a bet on who it's going to be next year, Bon Jovi. No one's going to care that he's covered up. No one wants to see a shirtless
Bon
Jovi running
around anyway.
Well, I don't
care about the outfit, but to me that's just such a convenient choice.
I thought that's all you cared about was the
outfit. No,
you don't want to watch the football game. All you're doing is the outfits.
Listen, I barely watched the halftime performance, which I told
you
before.
In transit.
Exactly. I was in transit. So, you know, if there was anything to sacrifice yesterday, it was the entertainment versus the football game.
I thought it was a good halftime show. A lot of people were really hard on it. Didn't think it was that good. I was entertained by the halftime show.
Well, based on what I saw on Twitter, it was a big mixed reaction over Beyonce's performance.
What were the criticisms?
Some just said that it was boring, to be honest with you. Now, I can't give my opinion because I did not see it. I'm going to try to see a replay of it.
I mean, was it as epic and crazy as Madonna's last year with all the set changes and, like, the Skyview stuff? I guess not.
Well, but that you don't need that necessarily to make it a good performance.
They had the cool special effects things, though, with, like, the multiple Beyoncés growing to the side. Then when she was spinning around the floor, they had the other images. I thought there was some cool stuff. Where's Lennon Marilyn, by the way, with his entertainment review? I don't
know. Yeah, that's right. We were expecting him to chime in.
Where's Len?
He may have gone to see the new Jennifer Lopez movie. He may have not even watched the Super Bowl, to be honest with you. That's always an option.
She actually is in a new movie. I'm trying to think.
She is. We mentioned. We promoted it well on Giants.com. We should be getting a little kickback after all that promotion.
I know, or at least some free tickets.
Exactly.
Though I'm not really interested, to be honest with you.
In the movie?
No.
The new one. I think you may want to catch a scene or two.
Now, the funny thing, she's not even the star of the movie. She's like
a secondary.
No, but
she has a prominent role. I mean, I didn't see it, but
she's very much
attractions.
Not mentioned, though. Like, I've seen Coming Attractions where she's not even mentioned.
I don't know what trailer you've been watching. You may be watching the 15-second version of the trailer. I saw the 2.5-minute one.
Oh, you're watching 2.5-minute
trailer. Well, she has been a big focal point in that trailer.
Well, hold on. I'm going to look this up.
You may have to go watch that a little bit later on.
I will get back to
you and Len can compare notes. That's what I think tomorrow's show should be
all
about.
Let's go to Dave in Rochester first. I'm sure Dave has something entertaining to say to add to the conversation. What's up, Dave?
Hey, brothers. Actually, a couple callers ago talked about the Akeem Nicks because the Yes Channel actually, maybe an hour ago, said that they were trying to work, the Giants were trying to work out a new contract for Nicks and how that would affect Cruz. Lance, you explained it perfectly, I think. I also got my Dottino, and then I also wanted to talk about, that play with the holding call. Man, I'm all for them playing because one of the worst things is, even being a Giant fan, is watching a semi-holding call go down as a holding call. I don't know. I think the 49ers kind of did get robbed on that one. I think that was a little much.
I agree.
I wanted to get your...
Hey, Dave, look at it this way. I mean, look, the referee, whether he makes the call or not, is going to determine the outcome of that game. And people say, we don't want the refs to sign the game. Well, by him ignoring a flagrant violation of the rules and keeping the flag on his belt is him controlling the game just as much as if he throws the flag when the flag shouldn't be thrown. Make the call by the rule book, and then you're not controlling the outcome of the game. You're calling the game the way it's supposed to be called.
Especially, that late in the game, especially being in the end zone. I think kind of sometimes, too, you got to make the call closer to the end zone a little bit more. I think you need to be a little more sensitive in that particular area, my guess.
Well, I think you got to eliminate the clock from the equation. That's the difficult part. If you're the official, you need to remove the fact that it's late in the contest, it's the fourth quarter, and this could very well be the decisive touchdown.
Now, we've seen penalties in the end zone on the interference and defenses holding in other playoff games. It's not like we haven't seen the call, and if it's the right call, nobody complains about it.
Right. Well, and then on my Dottino, like, what did Dottino have for – what did he eat for the Super Bowl? Did he make, like, a big, giant platter of stuff and – put it on the table, or did he just maybe like sit on the couch with like a Diet Snapple and some peanut brittle?
A Diet Snapple and peanut brittle. If I was to bet, and I have not talked to Dottino yet. That's actually pretty funny. I have not talked to Dottino yet about what he did for the game, but if it was my bet, he had some type of big Italian food platter thing.
A little eggplant parmesan.
A little
maybe.
Eggplant parm, a little chicken parm.
Yes,
that's true.
I can see that in the mix. And his Nikes were right near him because he definitely polished up those Nikes. It was a lot of time, especially during the 30-minute delay. Paul had plenty of time to catch up on sending out tweets, polishing the Nikes, getting ready for his morning run. It was extremely beneficial.
Does he cook or does he make the wife and the grandkids cook?
Paul
does he just sit on the couch and they just serve him the food?
I imagine Dottino gets served, but he doesn't have any grandkids yet. He only has one daughter, and she's college age. So Dottino, not quite yet with the grandkids, but I imagine Dottino had some food served to him on Super Bowl Sunday.
All right, guys.
High
thank
maintenance.
You so much.
We'll leave it at that.
Yes.
Yes. All right, Dave. Thanks so much for the phone call.
By the way, I have some tweets here from Dottino during the game last night. Let's see. I got to get my timeline straight here for a second. Let's see.
There's so
Let's
many
see.
To choose from. I don't even know why you're having trouble.
Hold on. Well,
the guy tweets every 5 seconds.
I would have figured this out for a second, but I saw one that I think you would appreciate. I'm trying to figure out the timing here. So 22 hours ago would be about, that would be yesterday in the morning. So we're not going to worry about those. Let's see. What else do we got here? All right, 16 hours ago. So that would put us the time stamp at around Boy, that will put us around 8 o'clock,
yeah,
I guess,
o'clock.
Something like
yeah.
that, give or take. At 28-17, the 49 – no, actually, no. The 16 hours ago was more
six
than
o'clock.
That. It's
six
about
o'clock.
6 o'clock.
Yeah, 6 o'clock, yeah.
49ers are going to win this thing 28-17. Now, Tino then makes the point that he thinks Alicia Keys should have done the national anthem next year for the New York-New Jersey Super Bowl. But, you know, I'm not sure.
So they
can
bring her back again. Wow, what a declarative statement
but
by
then,
Paul DeTino.
But then DeTino backs off and says that Faith Hill should do the performance
well,
next
that's
year.
No surprise.
Paul's a big fan.
Made that very clear a couple of weeks ago on Big Blue Game.
So he's trying to lobby for that.
Well, wait, Fox has the rights, right, for next year's game, if I'm correct.
Oh, we might get an American Idol person.
So
then.
Maybe a conflict of interest with her ties to NBC.
Carrie Underwood, maybe? Little Kelly Clarkson might make a return. Nah, she did it recently. They're probably not going to bring her back. You might have a. The Fox loves praying out those American Idol folks. They
I
do.
I think they may even go old school with the New York connection. What about like a Tony Bennett? Could you see that?
DeTino, early pick for Super Bowl MVP
of course,
is the
guy
always
more
who pulled
important
the
than my
plug
suggestions.
On the power. Yeah, I ignored that one.
Yes, I could tell based on no response. Anyway, continue.
Sorry. Honestly, I was so engaged
yeah,
in his tweets, right. I'm not even sure what you said. I got to
well,
be honest
I threw out,
that.
I said they could go old school with the New York connection, maybe like a Tony Bennett or
oh,
something.
Oh, yeah, I would
back
like to see a little Tony Bennett.
To bring in,
work.
You know,
yeah,
to do the national anthem or America the Beautiful.
I would be okay with that.
All right, I'm glad that you approve.
Oh, DeTino, maybe this is a work of a higher power to stop Ray Lewis from winning the Super Bowl. That was another tweet.
All right, he's getting a little bit better.
DeTino, by the way, Ray Lewis. Did everybody watch the Ray Lewis interview with Shannon Sharpe in that pregame show? Anybody see that? His this is it's kind of nuts. Ray Lewis's argument for how you know he had nothing to do with the murders at the Super Bowl, 12 years ago now, whatever it was?
2000.
Yeah. His argument was that if I had anything to do with that, there's no way God would have allowed me to have the success that I've had since then if I was really involved in the murder. Ray, I hope you're never on my jury someday, because let me tell you, that is some weird reasoning there, bud.
He dug real deep for that one.
So a big believer in karma, apparently. Well, you know, only bad things happen to bad people. Only good things happen to good people. I can
if only
that
life was that cut and
not
dry.
Not always the case.
I would agree.
There are a lot of bad people out there that have a lot of good stuff going on. Let's just leave it at that.
Very true. The good thing is you get to hear from Ray Lewis for years to come. If you are an avid watcher of ESPN.
Well, neither of us are, so that'll help us. And also Warren Sapp apparently going to leave NFL Network and reaching out to ESPN. Love to get him off NFL Network. That only helped that place.
And Warren Sapp, by the way, getting the edge over Michael Strahan for the Pro Football Hall of Fame vote. I know that created some controversy. At least a lot of people connected to the Giants believe that Strahan, based on his numbers, should have had the edge. I think Strahan will definitely get in. May take another year or two, depending on who's eligible next season. Overall, this was a very competitive class, and I know we can continue to talk about this the rest of the week, and we'll take your phone calls on the Pro Football Hall of Fame. But mark my words, Giants fans, Strahan will get his day where he will be heading to Camden.
I have a couple 2 a.m. DeTino tweets. Do you want to hear these?
Let's hear these. I'm sure these are great.
Oh, this one doesn't make any sense. NFL champ sets copycat trends. Rollout option will go away quicker since the Niners lost. No need to spread this fad further.
So he's saying the rollout is going to disappear.
Well, the whole running mobile quarterback thing is going to disappear because the Niners happen not to score on three chances at goal and the goal to go at the five, even though they did not use the spread option in those three plays from the goal to go at the five.
This league is full of mobile quarterbacks now. That's not going to all of a sudden disappear overnight.
No, now Kaepernick's just going to be a pocket passer.
Well, and DeTino's going to be his quarterback's coach, apparently. What else? What was the other 2 a.m. tweet?
There's some random stuff. Nothing crazy. Oh, no, but then Bob Glauber, by the way, tweeted to him at like, I guess this is at like 1 a.m., put on the Nikes for a midnight ride.
Ah, there we go.
And DeTino answers back, sidewalk's not clean enough to go in the dark. Darn snow, but if this were July, oh, yeah, explanation point. Yikes.
Does he have the headset flashlight? That's what we need to get him so that he can run around and can't complain about there's not enough light.
He has like the elbow pads
exactly
with the reflectors on
it. Exactly. I can definitely see him putting that on and running through the great communities of New Jersey.
Oh, my God.
We have to get him on that. And if he doesn't, I will purchase one for
you.
You
can put, like, the helmet on the helmet with the flashing lights.
Yeah. He could even have, like, a little cup of water, you know, like they have the beer and the little straw. He'll have some water on his helmet so that he can, you know, stay hydrated during the runs. We got to really get a whole Giants outfit created just for him. We could talk to the equipment manager.
Joe Skiba.
And we need to get them to create a full-blown outfit for Paul Dottino and his running.
Oh, boy. Where's walking, you mean?
Well, I'm sure walking. There's a little jogging maybe involved. Maybe we need to up the ante with him. I'm starting this speed walking. He's got to be a real man.
Oh, okay? Wow.
Start
real
jogging.
Man.
Start running. Well, what is this speed walking?
He likes to walk. He's a walker. He's not
a
runner.
He needs to pick up the pace a little
bit. He's probably
bit.
Walking or running right now, actually.
I'm
might
sure
be walking
he
here to take you to task.
And he's got the Giants mobile app on, too, listening to Big Blue Kickoff.
He can take you out to the woodshed.
Oh, boy. I can imagine.
All right, final thoughts on the game, Lance. To me, this game was lost in the first half. As much as all the things at the end of the game hurt, not running the ball from the five, the non-holding pass interference call in the end zone, the Niners simply did not make the plays they had to make to win this game. Whether it was Vernon Davis not catching a ball on that deep sideline pass, the LaMichael James fumble, the Kaepernick overthrow that turned into the interception, or just simply not looking sharp in the first half, or the defense not getting off the field in half number two. The Niners simply did not play a good enough football game to overcome, which could have been some mistakes by the referees, to win this football game. And that, to me, is the bottom line here.
This was a game of missed opportunities.
Yep.
I think that's probably the best way to sum it up for
the
Niners.
2-6 in the red zone. We talked about it earlier.
That was a killer. The two turnovers, which basically gave time of possession as a gift to the Ravens.
Ravens one time of possession, 32-27.
And that's not
a
huge disparity, no. But if you were to look at the numbers at the end of the half, it was much bigger. And that killed them because the fact that Kaepernick and company are always on the sideline and their defense is getting exhausted, and that's a lot of pressure you're putting on Patrick Willis and company. That came back to haunt them. That was really the big summary of this game. They don't turn the ball over twice in the first half. Maybe they walk away with points. How about the early drive where they have to settle for the field goal, as I mentioned. The ball goes off of Michael Crabtree's fingertips. They get a touchdown or at least a field goal there. You know, the whole swing of things changes. And granted, they played much better in the second half. But, you know, it's like the Giants situation in years past. You put so much energy into just getting back into the game that if your defense gives up one additional field goal, you don't have enough left to get that additional drive. Or that additional field goal or additional touchdown. And that's what really came back to kill the Niners. They came back, they got 31-29, but they just could not execute to get another big game-changing play to put them over the hump and walk away with the victory.
Now, we're going to have a busy week this week on Big Blue Kickoff Live. We'll dive more into the Giants offseason with Akiem Nix and Victor Cruz. That news coming out over the weekend. We're going to have a big show, too, on the Hall of Fame. Maybe we'll bring in Dottino to talk about the Hall of Fame with Parcells and Strahan. Obviously covered both those guys extensively. We'll talk about that. Bill Parcells obviously getting inducted into the Hall of Fame over the weekend. And Michael Strahan, much to my surprise, getting passed over. I think Strahan a better overall player than Warren Sapp. The fact that Warren Sapp gets in and Strahan doesn't, not a big fan of that. We'll talk about that later in the week as well. And we'll also touch on some Super Bowl memories and then look ahead to the offseason. Lance, excellent job as always, my friend.
Sounds good. We'll see you tomorrow.
9:30. Be there. Big Blue Kickoff Live. Have a good one.